Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Heart to Health Talk. I'm Zi Xing.
And I'm Sheng Hao. In today's episode, we're going to talk about the gamification of health and how games can be incorporated to encourage health behaviours. Joining us today is a very special guest, Dr. Joshua Wong. So Dr. Wong, would you mind introducing yourself for our audience?
Thank you both for inviting me. It's an honor to be here. My name is Dr. Joshua Wong. I've been part of the game design and health community for quite a while now. Currently, I'm working as an associate lecturer in the Singapore Institute of Management Global Education Program in the Diploma of IT program, where I basically teach students like yourselves how to design apps to be more user-friendly, especially for people who have difficulties understanding what it means to have a nice user-friendly app. Previously, I was working in the NUS School of Public Health, where I was in their telehealth core doing research on serious games to try and help people reflect on personal health lifestyle behaviors, especially for people who are not interested in getting started in health or interested in exercise at all. And even before that, I was completing my PhD at RMIT University in Melbourne, where I was doing research on international students and how they pursued well-being through the use of digital technologies such as their phone or websites. Previously, I also did master's and bachelor's in NUS in the School of Media and Communications. So I primarily come to this topic mainly from a design perspective, where I look at the design of games and the designer's approach to how to design good, well-used gamification or any sort of health games, as opposed to, let's say, a business perspective or a medical perspective. My approach is really more of what makes a good health game.
Nice to meet you. Currently, what I know about health gamification is that there's ReFit, these games that help out in promoting physical activity. But I understand that health gamification does cover more than that. Perhaps could you just introduce a little bit of what health gamification consists of?
The first thing to note is that gamification is actually kind of a loaded term because it became sort of a buzzword, especially among the business community around the early 2010s. And so everyone started getting into gamification, the business community, the e-learning community, and then eventually health in roughly around the mid-2014, 2015. But when we talk about the larger field of health and games and how those two intersect, there are, I would call them three big categories of the ways in which health and games intersect. The first is exercise games or exercise games. Those are full-on video games which incorporate some sort of physical activity in order to win the game. Early examples could be Dance Dance Revolution in the arcade, where you basically have dance on the dance pad in order to win the game. Also things like Wii Fit or Wii Sports, where you play by moving your body. The second sort of big category is this idea of gamification, which is insertion of game elements into non-game activities. Things like Zombies Run, for example, is when you put a game layer on top of an otherwise non-game activity of jogging. So you would normally jog anyway, but then they put on an extra layer of gaming to make it more fun or more interactive. So the difference between the first and the second categories is that in extra gaming, they have a full-fledged game and then they insert a physical activity into it. Whereas in gamification, they have a physical activity, but then they put a layer of games on top of it. So the priority is different. And the third big category is what I would call health education or health awareness kind of games, which focus not so much about the physical behaviors, but really more about the changing of people's minds or perspectives, informing them of how does your body work, how do you get new perspective on what disease is like, things like that.
Going by your second definition of gamification, we see even in e-commerce apps like Taobao, when you can redeem points based on your purchases and you can use those points to play Candy Crush style games. So I guess even beyond health, it's also expanded into other business areas as well.
Yeah, it started all the way from kindergarten. You have gold stars, you complete your homework, and you get 12 gold stars, you get to redeem a pencil case. Education has been pioneering this gamification model for a long time.
I'm curious because there's also Pokemon Go. I'm not sure if you yourself or your family members play that, but I play it occasionally. Does that also fall under the initially not a game and then they gamified it, or it was because Pokemon was game company to begin with?
It's a gaming company, so it started off as a game and then they just added some physical and social elements to it. Supposedly, the social elements are stronger than the physical elements. So it actually belongs to the first category, extra gaming, where you require some sort of physical activity, in this case, like walking around looking for Pokemon in order to complete the game. It's one of those borderline cases where it can be classified as either. I mean, these are not absolute categories which do not overlap at all. There is some significant overlap. Think of it as more like a spectrum between game elements and physical elements. In terms of, let's say, gamification, the common elements you will see in typical gamified activities will be things like, yes, points, and then some sort of collection of rewards, whether it just be badges or achievements or some sort of leaderboard ranking or scores. There could be things like the creation of an avatar or some sort of fitness game and various other kinds of tracking your progress as you go through a game. So you're 50% done on your daily exercise tasks for today. So these are all game elements that put onto typical non-game activity.
Clearly, all these wards and all these incentives, you mentioned earlier that it was a buzzword. So it's clearly working and it's very effective. So what is it about this kind of gamification that makes people want to take part in these activities? What is it that drives us to keep going?
That's the interesting thing. On one level, common sense level, you would think that it should be working quite well. And it does work to some extent. But I have a lot of mixed opinions about gamification and whether it actually works or not. Yes, on one level, there are certain things that gamified systems do. They create a more engaging experience, especially for people who, let's say, find running very boring. At least now you have something that is a bit more engaging. You have colorful pictures, you have colorful graphics, you have nice sounds that excite you or keep you going. It can give you a better mood overall, and you associate that better mood with whatever physical activity you're doing. And generally, what it does is that because of all this tracked progress, perhaps there's this element of competitiveness as well, or keeping up with your peers. So let's say if there's some sort of leaderboard of the people who ran the most or took the most steps in the last week, you are in your group with your other friends, you may compete to see who has the highest step count of that week. That can motivate certain people, the drive to achieve certain things. And of course, you get a hit of dopamine, the pleasure drug, every time you achieve something. Gamified systems tend to give you a lot of achievements, badges, and rewards for completing certain tasks. So those are some of the things which are common sense, enjoyable, happy. The question is really whether it lasts and it's sustainable for a long time. Let's take Pokemon Go. A recent study done by Harvard University tracked 1,000 people who were using Pokemon Go. I think they were tracking their physical step count or something similar. 1 week before Pokemon Go was released, the average step count was roughly around 4,005. During the first week once they downloaded Pokemon Go, the average went up to like 5,007 steps per day. However, the 20 weeks in, it was back to normal again. So there was barely any difference. It seems as though gamification is good, but there have been a lot of gamification apps recently. It's really exploded. There's been a lot of companies investing in creating these sort of gamified apps, fitness trackers, all sorts of fun and exciting games centered around fitness because games can be good for health. The main trouble is that it's still very early on in the industry for this sort of gamified health apps. And so what people do is that they create a system, they test it with a few users, and hey, look, it works. People like the game. People enjoy it. It seems to be promoting their physical activity. So it's all good. And then they stop analyzing there. So after the first couple of months, great, positive results. That's enough to prove the concept is viable and so we should then investigate. But what happens after 6 months? What happens after 1 year? How effective is gamification as opposed to non-gamification methods of getting people engaged and motivated to exercise? There's been not many comparison studies done, so we don't know either. But say that it may not be ineffective. Rather, we don't know because there hasn't been very few studies done on it.
So this theory of using game elements in health does seem like it might have some benefits. Because I understand that there's this feedback loop where if you do a physical activity or you push yourself to walk a little bit more steps, then you get some reward and you are able to get this dopamine rush that, yes, I did good, and you continue doing more. But is it the case where in current programs that are rolled out now, there's not enough rigor attached to it to make sure that it's sustainable?
Yeah, I think that's part of the issue. And you're right. Gamification largely works on the idea of positive reinforcement. If you do something that the game approves of, then the game will give you a positive reinforcement, dopamine kick, achievement badge, something that reinforces that behavior so that you do it more often. For one thing, there's a lot of different kinds of gamification apps. Some of it do well, and those are the ones that generally tend to have the most customers. There are a lot of them that do badly and designed badly. So then there's a mismatch between the target behavior and the reward structure or the target audience. We don't hear about that. We don't hear the success stories. But even that, here's an interesting article I came across recently, which talked about the different types of players and gamification. Because not one size fits all. There are different kinds of players for different kinds of games. If you play any sort of computer games, you will know that different games appeal to different kinds of players. So you can't really say a StarCraft player is the same kind of player who will enjoy Harvest Moon or Animal Crossing. So the question is, if there are different kinds of players, what about the players of gamification apps? Are there only one type of player? Do the gamification games and apps only appeal to a certain portion of players, or are they more general? Or can there actually be more varieties of games that appeal to different kinds of players? They just haven't been developed yet because we only think of one type of player. A guy by the name of Andrzej Marczewski came up with 6 different types of players of gamification apps. There are socializers. Socializers are people that are motivated by relating to others. They want to interact with others. They want to create social connections. Then there are achievers. Achievers are those that are motivated by mastering a system. They're looking to learn new things, want to improve themselves. They want challenges to overcome. Then they also have free spirits, who are motivated by autonomy. They want to have the freedom to do whatever they want to in a game. So these are sort of people who, let's say, build their own weird house in The Sims or in Minecraft, for example. You also got philanthropists, which basically are motivated by meaning and purpose. They don't care about themselves, but they want to do something to benefit others. So these are the sort of people you'll see in crowdfunding programs, in donation to charity, kind of for a good cause kind of programs, marathon for charity, something like that. You can also have players, and these are the players that get stuff from themselves, but find out whatever the system is rewarding, and then do things to get the rewards for themselves. And then last is the disruptors. They like change and variety, so they want to disrupt the system. They want to screw it up in order to find out. Like, that's fun for them. So these are your trolls, player killers. If you look at, let's say, the current sort of exercise games or gamified apps, most of the time, they target the people who want to achieve a particular thing, so achievers. Sometimes they might target socializers if they have, let's say, some sort of social group where they post your achievement against your friend's achievement, or you compete with your friends, or you support with your friends. These are the ones that I would encourage you to post on Facebook. Hey, I did my 10,000 steps today. How about you? And you have players. Players are the ones who are motivated by rewards. They can understand the system, and they play the system in order to get the rewards. These are the ones that will be most affected by the gamified system. Whatever the system is, I will learn it, and I will play it to win and get my reward. And they're motivated by that though. But the people who are free spirits, who want to create and explore stuff, disruptors just want to screw up your system. And the people who are philanthropists, doing things for a good cause,
if you look at these six different categories or segments, in terms of companies just attempting to gamify certain aspects of their products, they're missing a huge part of the audience according to the Polish researchers' categorization. In fact, even for the categories themselves, it might be quite hard to compartmentalize an individual in a single category, because I could be feeling mischievous today and I'll be a troll, but then tomorrow I'm feeling a bit more lighthearted, I'll be a philanthropist and so on. So even the mood will shift with the player's mood. So I can definitely see why it's so difficult to size the market that you have in terms of this kind of game design.
True. Yeah, and that's part of the issue, that not every game will fit every kind. Different players, they don't have a singular motivation. Oftentimes, many people have multiple motivations, and depending on how they're feeling that day, they might want to choose to fulfill one motivation or another. But then the question is, okay, if your player's mood varies every day, what kind of impact does it have on people who are trying to encourage regular exercise habits, whether you have to do it every day, or a game that requires you to do that? If you're not offering the reward suited to what the player's mood is at that day, then you're not achieving your objective of, let's say, encouraging people to exercise every day.
So far, we've been talking about how gaming could help improve physical activity. But you mentioned that there are other domains that gamification could benefit health. Perhaps you could talk a little bit more about your research project in terms of how did gaming specifically change people's behaviors or well-being or perceived well-being?
Yeah, I should clarify that so far, most of the studies on gamification, this achievement-based, point-based, reward-based system, has focused on physical behavior change. They do nothing with regards to attitude change or mental change. So they just focus on physical behavior and tracking and rewarding physical activities. If you want to talk about, let's say, mental components, mental health, learning, growing, understanding, dealing with mental trauma, like eating disorders or addictions to various substances or various habits, or even PTSD or ADHD, that one is a little bit more complicated. Usually, those don't really fall under gamification. In fact, the only gamification app that tried it with mindfulness and mental well-being and failed horribly, because you can't have a very distracting game when you're trying to be mindful and centered and calm. It just doesn't work. But there have been a lot of other games that have been developed. This normally fall under what's called as serious games. So games not for entertainment purposes, but for other purposes which are more serious in nature. There's an interesting game. It's more like interactive fiction, which is a choose-your-own-adventure novel, but online. A visual novel. It was a game about depression. It's called Depression Quest. You can find it free online. It puts you in the perspective of a depressed person. It's very interesting because it helps you build empathy for someone who's depressed. But people who are not depressed sometimes have a very hard time understanding how a depressed person thinks and how they have so little energy to do anything in life. So what Depression Quest does is that it puts you in the mindset of a depressed person. Everything is failing in life. And they give you choices in the game. Like choice 1, choice 2, choice 3. Some of choices are much better than others. Let's say you're depressed, you have no job. Choice 1, go job hunting. Choice 2, stay home, play games. Choice 3, sit on couch, watch TV. They give you a good choice, but they don't let you pick it. They cross it out. Because that's what mindset of a depressed person is. They know what is good, but they don't have the energy or the motivation or will to actually choose the best choice. And oftentimes, people who are not depressed or don't have understanding of depression may sometimes scold depressed people for saying, you have so much time available, why are you sitting on a couch? Why don't you go and do something useful with your life? But by playing Depression Quest, it gives you a better understanding. It's not that they don't want to, literally don't have the resources to be able to do so. And that, I think, helps you build empathy and more support to understand people who have a different experience of life. who are suffering from various kinds of mental traumas. So there have been games which focus on mental aspects, building empathy. There have been other games such as that Dragon Cancer, which is one family story of losing their 4-year-old son to cancer, told in game form, with trying to deal with cancer and then letting go, eventually, of their baby. And so these sort of games are games which build empathy for either people going through these issues or to help people who have similar issues to express themselves. My particular research, at least back in my PhD, was studying not just games, but in well-being in multiple forms.
I'm just curious, who are the developers behind these games? Are they related to people in the healthcare industry, or are they game developers, or is it some kind of collaboration between industry?
It varies. I think a lot of times, the people who develop these games are motivated by their own personal experiences and personal struggles. So these are coming from independent game designers, game developers, not necessarily the big companies. Then there's the story of Ben. Ben was a 10-year-old. This was back in 2004, I think. He was suffering from leukemia. Make-A-Wish Foundation selected him as one of their winners. And his wish was that he would have a game created about his cancer. So Make-A-Wish went to a bunch of game developers and asked them, can you please create this game for Ben? And no one was willing to do it because it cost like $1 million to create a game. Games nowadays are not cheap, a very expensive one. But eventually they managed to get volunteer game developers from around the world to work on a game for Ben. And they created a game called Ben's Game, where Ben played as a skateboarder, skating through his own body, shooting down cancer cells. But it made Ben happy. And more importantly, that was the first landmark game which introduced this whole idea of health games to help kids deal with difficult medical conditions. Because oftentimes kids don't understand why they have to go through such painful treatments. What exactly is cancer? And what is it doing to their body? Why do I have to take this pill? Why do I have to go through this machine? Why is the doctor being so mean to me and poking me with stuff? They feel helpless. They can't fight against it. The disease attacks them. Doctors also attack them. They feel that they have power to do anything. But by playing this game, it gave Ben a sense of empowerment. He could do something to fight the cancer. Even if it was just in a game, it gave him the self-efficacy, the belief that he could do something to fight. A similar game more recently that was developed is called Remission. Literally, R-E-Mission, targeted at kids with cancer. And they basically play a nanobot sent into their body to kill cancer cells, shooting them down. And they have different missions at different parts of the body, so targeting brain cancer, liver cancer. The real goal is really to give these kids a sense of agency, because otherwise they didn't understand what was happening. They had a hard time complying with what the doctors asked them to do, because they don't see the purpose. They resented the doctors who were doing painful things to them. But after playing this game, they felt they had the power to affect their cancer. They were also much more compliant with the treatments because they started to understand the doctor is actually sending reinforcements to help the cells in my body fight back against the cancer. It's a good thing. So that's the sort of things that serious games with health comes. And by just changing people's perspectives, by helping them understand, not necessarily changing people's behaviors, but indirectly, because they have a better understanding of what's going on in their body, why we need to do certain things, they indirectly change their behavior. But it's not as direct as, let's say, track how many times you've taken your medicine today or how many steps you walk today. That's the field I was working on as well when I was in NUS School of Public Health, right? We were trying to create a game dealing with motivations to start changing lifestyle behaviors for adults over 40 who weren't interested in exercise or any sort of health changes. So you have smokers, you had obese people, you had various kinds of people who weren't even thinking about change. If they didn't have a current health habit already, how can we help them start thinking about, hey, maybe it might be idea to start changing your life? It was a difficult problem to solve. I don't think we solved it very easily. With gamification approaches, you start off with people who are already motivated to exercise, and then you just add on more rewards to help them continue exercising for longer and better. But if you're someone who isn't motivated to exercise, how do you get them started? How do you get them realizing there is some value in exercising? Even though I'm not forced to do it, I might be interested in wanting to try it out.
I think it's really amazing that gaming is able to target this aspect, because from what I understand, there's this behavioral change model and there's different aspects to it. There's the pre-contemplative, there's the contemplation stage, there's the action stage. Most of the games that are currently popular or in circulation perhaps would be, for example, the games they mentioned on exergaming. They are games that target people who are already determined to at least start on the action. But serious games or gamification or apps can also work in ways such as changing people's perspective to change and target that groupy contemplative stage. I think that's really amazing, especially when you mention about how with the aspect of having an avatar, it can allow the user to somehow superimpose themselves into that situation and gain a better understanding of the situation around them.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the full technical term is the trans-theoretical model of change. It actually has 5 stages. So the pre-contemplative, contemplative, planning, action, and then maintenance. And you're right in that the majority of gamification and health apps track the last three stages. You're already doing something, it helps you do better. It helps track you and motivate you to continue doing it when you're planning to change already. Almost no one in the health and fitness gaming field has targeted the first two stages. Pre-contemplation before you even start thinking about change, and contemplation when you start thinking about possibly maybe wanting to change. That was what we were trying to do, and it involved a lot of designing to help people reflect. So games which put them in messy situations, in difficult situations, when there were different kinds of values, and they had to choose what's important to this character, and then also what's important to me. One of the biggest things was to figure out, you can't just put people into an exercise app and say, go exercise, because that's just forcing them to do something. And it's all extrinsic motivation. It's all motivation from external pressure. Once you remove the external motivated, it won't continue. So you have to help them develop intrinsic motivation, internal desire to do something because of their own rewards, not because of someone pushing them to do something. And we realized the only way to make that work was to somehow connect healthy lifestyle behaviors to their own life values. Whatever they value in life, whether they say taking care of family or looking better than others or staying involved in community, if we could somehow link those life values to changing for healthy behavior, then we have something that's worthwhile doing. How do we design games that could help them first understand and clarify what their own internal values are? Because not everyone is the same. So whatever their motivation was, figure out how do we show them that choosing healthy stuff now can actually help you last longer, and making that connection was the challenge and the way we hoped to design the game.
So given all this, what would you say would be the future of health gamification in Singapore?
I think it's still very early on. I know this may sound a bit weird, especially for people in the business and for industry fields, where if I say 7 years, it's still very early. In academic space, that makes perfect sense because it takes forever to do proper good research. If you're a business person, that 7 years is like too early to have any sense of the industry, they will back you upside down for it. The commercial space moves much faster than the academic and research space does. Having said that, I do believe we are still very much in the early years of the gamification of health. Other industries like learning are more mature in terms of their implementation of gamification. There's a lack of knowledge in a lot of areas about how to design really good stuff that would be able to be effective. And that's why actually public health studies are quite important, because they study not just sort of the medical treatment of stuff, but also the attitudes towards health, the values and the processes of change in health behavior and health of not just an individual, but also of society. Because there's an element where you want to get the community involved. You want to get good support networks for people as well. Because the game alone isn't a magic bullet that will change everything. There's a lot of environmental factors, a lot of social factors involved in supporting a person's behavioral change. So the future of gamification, I think, is bright now. I think if we can explore some of the long-term consequences and therefore then design better games that will be a little more sustainable long-term change, I think that will be best. And finding ways to integrate not just the game as a standalone, but integrate them with other factors that can help support that change, like support from the family and friends, access to good information, information about places to avoid eating unhealthy food, for example. One of my friends is currently working on an app which overlays food recommendations with the dietary content of each dish. So go to like a hawker store, you see char kway teow being offered there. Check on your phone, you can see, oh, when I ordered this char kway teow, how much potassium is in there, how much sodium is in there, how much fat content is in there. That's the sort of thing he's working on. It can definitely be useful for people who are managing their weight. There's a lot of open territory to explore. A lot of places where people can develop. In terms of, let's say, like a career in this field, please join. We need a lot more help. There's a lot of challenges to overcome. The mountain is very, very big, but there's a lot of spaces for people to climb.
That sounds really exciting. It's a very nice point that we can end off our interview. Thank you so much for sharing with us about health and games. And I hope more people will be able to take home this idea that gamification and the elements of gaming can benefit health. It doesn't have to be something that's in your face like exergaming, but it could be something more subtle in changing your behavior or changing the way that you understand things. With that, thank you very much for coming down.
You're welcome.
Bye. Bye. If you want to find out more about health and tech or hear about similar experiences, follow us at our social media platforms at Heart to Health Talk. That's at Heart to Health Talk, where additional resources and nuggets of wisdom can be found. Hope to catch you in our next episode. Bye!